One of the reasons more Australians are choosing not to eat meat is the inhumane conditions inside an abattoir. And my next guest was way ahead of the curve. She was designing more humane handling facilities for cattle as early as 1965.
My name is Temple Grandin. I'm not like other people. I think in pictures, and I connect them.
That's actor Claire Danes playing the role of Temple Grandin in a movie of the same name. But as well as inspiring a rethinking of stockyard design around the world, Temple Grandin is also credited as being one of the first people to give everyone an insight into how someone with autism sees the world. Temple's written books on everything from animal genetics to parenting to learning social skills. Temple Grandin has also been named as one of Time magazine's most influential people in the world, and her life is the subject of the award-winning movie we've just heard a tiny excerpt from. Temple's currently in Australia to talk to young people and parents about autism, as well as to tour Australian cattle stations. And Temple Grandin, welcome to Life Matters.
It's great to be here today.
Temple, I understand you've been actually just visiting cattle stations over in WA. What have you seen and what do you think?
Well, I was really impressed with what I saw. I've been in a number of cattle operations in Australia over the years. I've done New South Wales. I've been up in Queensland. I've been in the interior of the outback, which is much more arid than the United States. And I was just out at Harvest Beef out in Western Australia, did a really nice job. They've got a system based on my designs, but they've also are working on good management. You have to have both the equipment and the good management to go along with it.
So just explain to people, what is so different about your design of stockyards and cattle races compared to the older, less, well, humane methods, if you like?
Well, the main thing is if you have a curved raceway, when the cattle come out of the forcing yard, they're not seeing the people standing around up ahead. That's one of the things that makes it work. Also, cattle have a natural behavior to want to go back to where they come from. But I've been in a number of older facilities where we worked in and worked with them on lighting up dark raceway, getting the coats off of the fences, maybe putting up a shield so they didn't see people walking around up ahead. And sometimes these very simple changes can make a big difference.
Temple, when you first got interested in cattle, I think was when you went to spend some holiday time with your aunt and uncle on their cattle ranch away from your mum and the rest of the family. And when you got there, you obviously had, according to what I saw in the movie, a real sense of relationship and bonding with the animals themselves. Is that a fair thing to say?
Well, I really got interested in cattle, and this brings up a really important thing on how students get into careers. I came from a non-agricultural background in the east coast of the United States, from outside of Boston. I had never been west of the Mississippi before, went out to Arizona, and I got exposed to the ranching industry, and I got interested in that. Students get interested in things they get exposed to. I think a big problem we got with too many kids today is they're getting addicted to electronics, and they're not doing anything else. We need to have times we got to get off the electronics and do other things.
One of the things you noticed was that the cattle that were quite agitated sometimes on your uncle and auntie's farm would calm down and relax when they were inside what was, I think it's still called, a cattle press. What did that make you want to do?
Well, when I got into puberty, I went out to the ranch when I was 15. I started having horrible panic attacks and anxiety. It's now controlled with antidepressant medication. I take a low dose of antidepressants. They absolutely saved me and stopped the anxiety. But I noticed that when the cattle went into the, what they call a squeeze chute at home, or that when they got squeezed in there, that they kind of relaxed. So, of course, I went and tried it. So then I built a device I could get into that applies pressure. And for some people, pressure's calming. It doesn't work with everybody, but it does work with some people. And that of course got me interested.
So you actually built your own pressing machine that you used when you went to college, I think, after high school. And what is it about someone who's living with autism, what is it about being pressed in on both sides that gets you to feel calmer?
Well, it's just, I think it's just a biological difference. It doesn't work on everybody, I want to emphasize, but some people are calmed by that.
Sure.
And I do have my book, Thinking in Pictures, and I talk about the squeezing machine. I also talk about experiences with using a low dose of antidepressant medication. I want to emphasize a low dose has to be just right. The book is 20 years old, but it's still accurate. I worked for years with people in skilled trades, with large meat companies, on building the things I designed. And boy, there were people that were dyslexic, they had ADHD, they had mild autism. And the reason why they were in those really good high-end skilled trades is they took welding in school. I want to beg the schools, do not remove the hands-on classes. Cooking, sewing, welding, automobile shop, wood shop. Because there's a huge shortage, of high-end skilled trades, good jobs, full health benefits, and they will not get replaced by computers. There's some high-end doctor jobs, you know, like radiology, pathology, things like that, that computers will be able to replace. They're not going to replace a welder who can read drawings, heating and air conditioning, plumbing or electrical.
So, yeah, keep those trades alive by engaging young people in them. And that's a very strong arm of your talk on TED Talks as well about this.
That's right.
In fact, you actually say the kind of mind you have, which sees the world in pictures and allows you to design inside your head, and it then becomes living proof in construction, is one of those great ways of a mind thinking differently to others that we absolutely need for the future.
Absolutely. In fact, there's kind of three different ways that people think. And the thing about people with autism is they tend to think either in pictures the way the movie shows it, or they're more a mathematical thinker. And I've been out to our Silicon Valley. We've got all our major big tech companies, and half those programmers are on the autism spectrum, but they avoid the labels. So one geeky kid gets to go work for a major tech company. Another geeky kid might go into a skilled trade, and then there's others getting addicted to video games and going absolutely nowhere. And then a third kind of mind is your word kid, often loves history, and they're very good at writing. They'd be good at journalism. I just talked to a guy yesterday at the autism meeting that wants to do sports journalism. And I said, go for it. Go ahead and do it. Make yourself really good at it.
My guest is Temple Grandin, who is touring Australia to talk to parents and children who are living with autism, and also to view some of the ways we deal with animal husbandry and design when it comes to the cattle industry, something she's spent most of her life working on, and in fact is now a professor of animal science at Colorado State University. When you were growing up, Temple, you were in a time where medical science viewed autism as something to be institutionalized. But your mother said no. She was really instrumental, wasn't she?
Oh, absolutely. I had great mentors. And actually, the first doctor I went to when I was nonverbal and had autistic behaviors at age 2.5 was a neurologist. And he referred my mother to a speech therapy school that did a lot of one-on-one therapy, teach me language. And then there was a lot of emphasis on turn-taking games. How do you play a little board game or some other game and learn how to wait and take turns? That's an important thing for these kids to learn. I was brought up in the 50s where manners were taught in a much more structured way. You say please and thank you, learn how to shake hands. And one of the things I'm seeing today in a lot of meetings is I'll have grandparents come up to me, may have been a successful engineer, you know, now retired. And they find out they're on the autism spectrum when the grandchildren get diagnosed. And granddaddy had a good job, because he had a paper route at age 11 and learned how to work. Now, I realize paper routes are being phased out, but a lot of these kids need to learn how to do a task on a schedule outside the home. You could do walking dogs, you could do church volunteer or neighborhood community center volunteer jobs, and then the instant they get legal, they need to get real jobs. The other problem you've got with autism is it's so variable. You're going from Silicon Valley genius computer programmer or maybe a physicist, or to a master skilled trades person who built a lot of my facilities. Then you have the other end of the spectrum where it's much more challenged. They may have epilepsy on top of it, other medical problems, nonverbal, and can't dress themselves. And it's all called the same name. Now, when the kids are little, when they're 3, you don't really know how things are going to work out, but it's super important to spend a lot of one-on-one teaching them language, teach them how to dress themselves, teach them basic skills. And basically, all the kids that are different build the stuff. I went down to Cape Kennedy where they launched the moon shot and they were just finishing up a brand new launch pad, and the person who built that had Tourette syndrome. Well, what would you rather be, Mr. Tourette's or Mr. Launchpad? I think Launchpad's much more cool.
So do I. And Temple, I take it from what you're saying here, those life skills, that tuition, that structure around social skills and learning how to interact with a world that may at times feel quite alien, gives you the foundation to move into the kind of ideas generation and collaboration that you then went to after you left college.
Well, the other thing is, when I started out in the feedlot industry, in the cattle industry in the U.S. in the early 70s, it was totally a man's world. There were no women working out in the yards. Being a woman in a man's industry in the early 70s was a much bigger obstacle than autism was. A much, much bigger obstacle. And there's a scene in there where I was thrown out of the feed yard because the cowboys' wives wouldn't want me to be there. They put bull testicles on my vehicle. That actually did happen. And what I had to do is make myself really good at what I did. And there's a scene in the movie where I walk up to the editor of the Farmer Ranchman magazine and I get his card because I realized if I wrote for this magazine, that would really help my career. So I designed a project and then I wrote about it. Writing was also a very important part of my career.
And the editor of that magazine, Temple, sorry to interrupt. Sorry, I was just going to say, and the editor of that magazine in the movie says, anything you want to write, Temple, I will publish.
And he did. That's true. That scene is true.
So you were able to sway minds, even if not inside the stockyard themselves, at least for those people in the industry who were reading that magazine, as to the fact that you had the credibility, you had the qualifications, you had the knowledge to introduce change.
I can remember one of my early articles. I had to cover the Arizona Cattle Feeders meeting, and they didn't want to let me in because I was a girl. Well, I made sure I wrote the best article. They had like three different speakers in there. I summarized those talks absolutely accurately. I didn't misquote anybody. And I got a reputation that when I covered the Arizona Cattle Feeders meeting, I did a really good job and nobody was misquoted. And the people respect you for stuff like that. And this is very, very much in the beginning of my career, very beginning of it.
Well, Temple, I'm going to come back to the movie now because there's a scene, and so far everything that you've described seems to be matched quite well in the movie. Here's another scene where you come up against, again, a room full of men in an abattoir who aren't quite on the same page as you when it comes to abattoir design. Let's have a listen.
This looks like an airport for cows. Yeah.
Thank you.
I didn't mean that as a compliment. And conveyor belts for cattle? Do you have any idea what the cost is on this? And you've got solid walls and floors? We have those slatted for a reason. It's cheaper.
I'm sorry, Miss Grant, and it's clear you just don't have the experience to design something like this.
The walls are solid, so the cattle won't be distracted by light or movement outside. They balk at unexpected things.
I'm sure that's nice for the cattle, but the cost, Miss...
How much money does it cost you to pay handlers to prod the cattle along and then hold them back when they stampede?
Yeah.
How many times a day do your chutes stop because of pileups?
Yeah.
How many cows break a leg and bring everything to a halt? With my system, there'd be none of that. There'd be a steady, calm flow.
And Temple, when you put those arguments to that abattoir about why your design would actually cost them less over time, did they finally cave in?
Yeah, they did. And I presented figures. I mean, you know, the biggest thing is I could save them on labor. I was able to take one person, one man in this case, out of the job. And I, you know, I figured out the cost on that. And I could cut down on bruising. There were some really good people in the industry. Like when I did the dip vat project, which was one of my really early projects, the head of a feed yard called McElhaney Cattle Company came up to me and asked me to do it. And I said, give me 3 weeks. Because at the time, I didn't know how to do the concrete reinforcement. Man, I was running around town looking at every dip vat. I was writing away to the universities to get the drawings for how to do the steel reinforcement. I had to make myself knowledgeable. There were some really good people in the industry that saw my ability. The people that gave me the most trouble were the foremans, that layer of management just below the big bosses who owned the plants and the feed yards.
So you had to convince them and then you were able to move forward.
Well, that's right. And there was also a very good contractor that came into my life. He saw my drawings, recognized my ability, and he was wanted to get into the feed yard and plant construction business. So he seeked me out. I also had a great science teacher. I had a wonderful third grade teacher. And my mother knew just how much to stretch me. Too many kids with a label today are getting babied. They're not learning basic skills like shopping. Mother knew how to stretch me. When I was 15 and I was afraid to go to the ranch, she gave me a choice. I could go for 1 week or I could go all summer. Not going, that was not an option. So you give choices, but you have to stretch just outside the comfort zone. Now, you do have to be careful about multitasking. I'll tell you something that doesn't work for a first job. Shove an 18-year-old person into a super busy McDonald's at the lunch rush. That's not going to work. Too much multitasking. There's problems with multitasking. That's one of the things. It is a handicap, and you have to work around that. But designing stuff doesn't require multitasking. So I could get really good at that.
Well, one of the people you just mentioned as being a major influence and mentor on you was your science teacher, and he actually gave you set tasks that you wanted to meet. Tell us about that man.
There's a scene in the movie where I make the optical illusion room, and he wasn't going to tell me how to make it. He wanted me to figure it out for myself.
This is your science teacher, right?
Yeah, this was a science teacher. And I think this is really important. He gave me interesting projects to do. The other thing my science teacher did is education was a pathway to the goal of becoming a scientist. It wasn't just an end of it in itself. I'm seeing too many students graduating from high school, graduating college, and they don't know what to do next. No, doing well in school was just a pathway to becoming a scientist, not just a graduation, becoming a scientist. And I think that's a really important thing to motivate some of these students. It has to be a pathway to something that they want.
Temple, you're not in Australia just to look at the state of our cattle industry, but also to talk to parents and children who have autism in their families about the way forward. What advice for anyone listening who is perhaps on the spectrum about how it is they should view their own autism in light of what you learned over your years?
Well, let's start out. If you have a three-year-old who's not talking, you've got to do something about getting treatment now. You can't just sit and wait. And then the kids will go diverge into different groups. And on the fully verbal segment, develop the strength. My strength was art. Another student, it might be mathematics, and they're going to go the programming route or the tech industry route. Build on the thing that the kid is good at. I love Stephen Hawking's comment right before he died, and he said, concentrate on the things your disability doesn't prevent you from doing well. And that's credited to the BBC and the New York Times. I really like that. Algebra, that was impossible for me. You know, algebra should not be a barrier to going into a skilled trade. You don't need it for skilled trades.
Is that because algebra was a conceptual framework of mathematics as opposed to a visual framework, which is where
you fit? There's nothing visualized.
Yeah.
If I can't make a graphics file, I don't understand it.
Right.
You know, it's just that simple. But that gives me ability and a lot of other things. The visual thinkers will invent something like the round baler. You know, in the old days, they just like the hay was in square bales. Somebody had to think up the idea of winding hay up like a jelly roll. And that's visual thinking that does that. A farmer invented the round baler. The equipment companies didn't invent it. They just perfected it.
Temple, you're now talking and touring all over the world, trying to impart some of what you've already canvassed with us in this conversation. And it's been a fascinating conversation. How do you view yourself now, as you are in your later years? What would you tell Temple when she was young?
Oh, that's a hard question, but I kind of think in my later years, my job is to help motivate the younger students. You know, the kids now that are late teens, early 20s, you know, where are they going to end up going? And I always talk about the different kinds of minds. When I was working on all of my projects, I worked with the special ed department. The special ed department builds a lot of the stuff. Right now I'm in the office of IRABINA, an autism services group. They had me come and do the talk just recently. And right now I'm kind of jumping between, I call it silos in the U.S., you know, like for grain storage silos, because I visualize them. And you've got an autism silo over here with it. And then you've got the tech industry over here that avoids the labels. Then you've got the autism groups, and then you've got the skilled trades groups. And I'm kind of jumping between these different groups now, because I want parents and teachers to see that, you know, a lot of these kids can go out and do something really good. And this brings up a basic thing about identity. I'm a college professor first, autistic second. Autism is an important part of who I am. I like the logical way I think. But the college professor and the animal science and the cattle design, that comes first. And I've some of the most fun stuff I did in my whole life was just figuring out how to solve a building problem or animal behavior problem.
Do you still have a squeeze machine?
I only broke a number of years ago. I still have it, but I'm hugging real people now.
And what got you to that stage?
Well, basically, just getting desensitized. It's important with sensory problems for the kid to control it. For example, if a kid is afraid of noise and he hates the vacuum cleaner, give the vacuum cleaner to the child where they can turn it on and control it. Same thing with the blender. That's another thing that makes a really big noise. And when it's in the squeeze machine, I can control it. And then you can gradually get desensitized. I still have problems with hearing when there's too much background noise. I still have some auditory processing problems. And if I'm in a super noisy restaurant, I can tolerate it, but I can't hear the conversations. But I'm thinking about all the guys that I worked with, great guys I worked with that built my projects. And I'm thinking about what those guys would be diagnosed with today. In fact, I've discussed it with some of the guys. ADHD, dyslexic, probably autistic, probably something else. And the thing that saved them was taking those skilled trades classes in school. Now, I want to emphasize skilled trades aren't for everybody. But one of the reasons I'm pushing it now is there's a ton of good jobs and they will not get replaced by computers. Where some of the high-end knowledge jobs, computers are going to replace them.
Temple, you are an inspiration, continue to be so, to all realms across populations around the world. You've been an inspiration to us. And can I say, it's been an absolute delight to speak to you. Temple Grandin, thank you so much and thanks for joining us on Life Matters.
Well, thank you so much for having me.